Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNRadio.com/Behind the Badge.
Chicago's very own Bob Surratt starts your day. WGN.
Our thanks to the Nexstar Tabernacle Choir. It's 7:39, and Scott Kleinberg is on the Team Hochberg phone line with our weekly social media update. How you doing today, Scott?
I'm doing well, Bob. How are you doing?
About 40% right now.
Oh, 40%. Okay.
Election Day, 2 weeks or so from today. Yeah, it is exactly 2 weeks from today, isn't it? And things are getting a little tense in the social media world. There's supposed to be some serious follow-up today to Twitter's decision last week to remove those New York Post articles. And more importantly, Twitter's decision to impede their distribution. Tell us more about this, Scott.
So the Wall Street Journal is reporting that the Senate Judiciary Committee is supposed to issue a subpoena today to Twitter chief executive Jack Dorsey. You know, Twitter blocked those New York Post articles that came out last week and everybody was talking about, the ones about Joe Biden and Hunter Biden. And of course, his campaign has denied that. And according to the Wall Street Journal, Dorsey is being targeted because Twitter prevented users from posting links to the articles outright. You remember, they completely just shut the whole thing down, as opposed to Facebook, where they limited their redistribution, which is what they normally do. So that could, you know, in turn see Dorsey forced, you know, in front of the Senate to answer questions about his company's approach. You know, several senators have said, you know, over and over again that they want this repeal of these Section 230 laws, which grant digital platforms a level of protection from liability that, you know, for content on their sites.
And after that controversy started, Twitter reversed course, didn't they?
Yeah. Reaction was so swift that Twitter quickly reversed itself. I think they had to. And remember, you know, Twitter's not regulated. It's a private company. So, yeah, it has a certain responsibility. You know, it is a behemoth, and, you know, it with great power comes great responsibility. But it is free to do whatever it wants. And, you know, I think that's about to come in the form of a reminder from Congress.
You mentioned Section 230, and that's been around a long time. What is it exactly?
It's been around since 1996. And in a nutshell, 230 is a provision. It's part of the Communication Decency Act, and it says that no provider or user of an interactive computer service shall be treated as the publisher or speaker of any information provided by another content provider. So what that basically means is that's why people can say pretty much anything on social media without the social media companies being liable for it. Now, the argument from Trump and other senators on both sides of the aisle is that this was written for the Internet of 25 years ago, and a lot has changed in 25 years.
So now that the dust has pretty much settled on the New York Post thing, Twitter is playing up their plan to apply misinformation labels to content they deem dangerous and not misleading. And that brings to mind that post from who was it, Dr. Scott Atlas, the yep. White House guy now on the coronavirus task force, who had something about masks that was completely false and really, personally, I think quite dangerous, because everybody agrees masks can only help. And so his post was taken down, wasn't it?
It was taken down. And the crazy thing about that, Bob, is I was one of the people who actually tweeted to Jack Dorsey and said there has to be a way to report this tweet. Because we've talked about, there's no way to report a COVID-19 tweet, you know, being false. I actually tweeted it to him and I said, this has to be taken down. And the next day it was taken down. I have no illusions that it had anything to do with me, but you are absolutely right that that type of thing is completely dangerous. And Twitter is trying its best to use its misinformation labels as a way to, you know, get through all of this. They don't want to take stuff down. They want to be able to just apply these labels and let people decide for themselves. But if they're not going to have a way to report it that makes sense, then they're not going to be able to succeed at doing that. So I think it's going to just end up being a real wait and see type of thing.
Yeah, don't downplay your power, Scott Kleinberg. You have great power. And so talk about Twitter and removing content, and what's the latest now on this?
Well, you know what? I mean, Twitter was never happy with having the type of power where they're going to remove stories. They've always said that it's a tool in their arsenal. But, you know, it's a label is much more Twitter speak. The label, I think, with changes to how retweets work, we talked about that last week, that they're going to make you quote tweet stuff. That could conceivably slow the flow of misinformation. I've seen some of these labels start to appear on tweets. You know, some of them are white screens with white text. Some of them are white text with black screens. It's like they're trying to make them stand out in different ways. So we'll have to see. But, you know, they have all these plans for these labels. And, you know, if they could make them work, then maybe there'll be a slow of that misinformation spread.
Talking with social media strategist Scott Kleinberg. Scott, what's your take on the news this morning about the Justice Department filing an antitrust lawsuit against Google for allegedly breaking the law in using its market power to fend off rivals?
I think it is going to be a huge story. I think, obviously, it's going to be a big story today. And I think in the next year, it is going to be an absolutely huge story. You know, we just talked a few minutes ago about this whole Section 230 thing, right? And about how there's all this freedom for all these people to say all these things, and how people on both sides of the aisle are looking for ways to change that. This is just another example of how tech has become so big that they're looking for ways to rein it in. So I think this is the beginning of something huge.
Let's talk about Zoom and a new way to use it, or at least a new way to think about it.
Yeah. So, you know, Bob, I mean, 2020 is definitely going to end up being the year of a lot of things, including the year of Zoom, because, you know, it went from this enterprise level chat program that like no one really heard of to mainstream in a very short period of time. Now, Zoom is seeking to capitalize on all that attention with event discovery and monetization features, meaning all of these places that can no longer have events in person, they're going to be having these events online. So now paid Zoom users are going to be able to create and host online ticketed events. They're calling it On Zoom, and they're calling it an events platform and marketplace that is supporting the transformation from going to events in person to events online on Zoom.
So you'd need to pay for Zoom to be part of this?
Well, to host and create something, you would need to be, not to attend an event, other than what, of course, you know, the charge to attend the event might be from the person who's organizing it. On Zoom is going to enable paid Zoom users to schedule and host these one-time events, or perhaps an event series, or even a drop-in for up to 1,000 people. I can't even imagine 1,000 people on a Zoom. That would just be unbelievable. But, you know, organizers, they'll be able to list and sell tickets on the platform. They'll be able to promote events via social media, and it's going to work with PayPal. So that means that an organizer of an event needs to be set up on Zoom and on PayPal. But people who attend an event, you know, they can use a credit card to pay. You know, the idea is simplicity on both sides.
Tell us about this new feature Zoom is working on for all users, paid and otherwise. What's this about?
Well, it's actually an update to something we talked about several months ago, which is where security was a real issue for Zoom meetings. You might remember, Bob, we were talking about the term Zoom bombing, where people were finding ways to drop into meetings and they were spamming them. Because, you know, these problems weren't anticipated when Zoom grew so quickly. There was no way to anticipate it. But now that all these months have gone by, Zoom has made these big changes and improvements. So they're testing their end-to-end encryption solution. And end-to-end encryption, in very layman terms, is what makes your conversations and your messages completely safe.
We've come to expect the communications we use today to be encrypted, right? That's no longer a luxury.
That is absolutely correct. You know, as technology improves, so will encryption. If you use iMessage on Apple or Messenger on Facebook, your messages and communications are already encrypted. Encryption is the tool that keeps your password secure and your bank account information safe. I mean, I never assume anything is guaranteed safe because it's really not. But for a product like Zoom, it's a logical progression. You know, a few months ago, we may have thought this remote and virtual workspace was temporary. I think we all really thought that. But now that might not be true. I mean, who knows when we can safely go back to offices? And even when we can go back, who knows if we're going to go back? So a lot has changed in 7 months, and I really think this is just the beginning.
All right. Now, before we let you go, Scott, maybe this is a good morning to go over a couple of things regarding Zoom. Like, for example, if you want to turn the camera off so that you're still part of the Zoom meeting, but you don't want anybody to see you, what do you do?
There's if you hover over the banner at the bottom on Zoom, there is a way to stop video. You can also stop your audio. You can also do this under the preference section of Zoom. There are no shortages of ways to turn off your video and to turn off your audio on Zoom, both on a mobile and on a desktop device.
And if you just want to mute the microphone, you can just do that easily, can't you?
You can do that. You can choose audio or video. You can choose both. Yeah, they make it very easy. It even says mute microphone, mute audio. It's definitely pretty simplistic.
If only Jeffrey Toobin had checked with Scott Kleinberg first. Scott, appreciate the info as always, and we'll talk to you next week. Have a great day.
You do the same, Bob. Thank you.